Welcome back to Weebology. Thanks, y'all, for coming to class. I am your Pillsbury Professor, Ricky.
Okay, and I am your Zen Professor, Ethan.
Yeah, I had between the last episode we just recorded and right now, in that 5-minute span, I had this incredible craving for biscuits. I want a biscuit, like a chicken biscuit or a sausage biscuit.
Okay.
I want it, dude. I want biscuits and gravy. I want food that'll put me to sleep.
Okay, man.
Man, I am.
I think I could use some fruity candy or something.
Fruity candy. Ooh. Don't you have a whole box of Nerds you're saving for Patrick over there?
I do. Patrick, come get your Nerds, brah.
You've had those for how long now?
Only a week.
Oh yeah? Yeah, only a week. Wink,
yeah.
Wink. Yeah, Pat, they're fresh. Come on down and grab yourself a prize. A whole box of fresh Nerds. Oh my God, where are we starting with this? Man,
it's your fault.
It is my fault.
Mr. Biscuit.
I want to eat biscuits and watch more Black Lagoon. That's all I want.
Hell yeah. I want to watch more Black Clover, but
we can't all get what we want.
Always get what you want.
Okay. Small thing. I'm still working through Black Lagoon. It is shockingly good. The Jormungand elements are there.
Shockingly good. What the fuck?
Well, I mean, the thing is like, I guess I would personally pass at that show because I could watch gunfight type shows like that in real life.
It's a classic, you fools.
It is a classic. I need it in my brain.
Fools.
I need it in my brain. But I'm liking Rock's transformation. I'm liking Revy's character development, and I like everyone else involved. They're really
everything
cool.
Else about Revy too.
Mm-hmm. She is a smoke-a shoho. So I'm really enjoying that.
Maybe her name's Katrina or something.
Yeah.
The Russian
yes.
Leader.
Yes. She's cool. I like her
a lot.
She's
so dope.
But that is not the show we're talking about today, Ethan. Today,
yeah?
We're talking about one of the hardest hitting anime in recent memory, and I mean that literally. Ethan, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about Baki Season Trey.
Yes, we are riding the wave. It's Season 3. They're calling it Season 3, even if the first two seasons were part one and part two of the same arc.
Yeah.
And that's how it's classified on Netflix. But Season 3 just popped, I want to say last week or a week prior, just a couple weeks ago for us at time of recording. And I really, really enjoyed this season because it is one fat tournament arc.
Yeah, I think it made up for a lot of the ineptitudes of Season 1/2.
Yes, this season had more through lines of an actual story than the first arc ever did. And I think since we have yet to talk about that first part and that first arc, we will refer to that as back information to kind of give you context for the Great Raitai Tournament arc. So,
Grand Raitai.
This show at a high level. Grant, what is it? What did I say?
Grand Raitai.
Grand Raitai. Grand Raitai. Okay. It sounds like a dish I can order, like the number 11 at
can a
Chinese
Can I get a Mai Tai and a Raitai?
Mai Tai and give me a Grand Raitai, please. Hold. No extra sauce. Give me triple sauce, please. But the show primarily focuses kind of on a boy named Baki Hanma, who is considered the strongest teenager or strongest boy fighter in Japan. So he is only 17, and he is this ungodly,
he's basically
kid.
A bloody god, mate.
And his one overarching character goal, through not just part one, but through this tournament arc and beyond, is he wants to defeat his father, Yujiro Hanma.
Yeah.
Also known as the ogre, the strongest man or creature on earth. And I really do like Baki as a show, but you'll hear throughout this episode, you know, I almost found it hard to bring Baki as an engaging show to talk about on a podcast setting because of its loose plot. Would you agree that the show's plot is, you know, tight? Is it well written? What do you feel about the plot of Baki?
It is. The problem is we from an anime Netflix standpoint, we only got dropped in the middle of the story.
That is true. Baki...
The plot and through line has been there from the beginning. They just did a really bad job of, like, catching people up who hadn't seen or read the original manga. Or I believe there was an old school anime as well.
I think there were a handful of OVAs that showed the pivotal fights before we see... But it was made in no way in association with the new show on Netflix. It was made ages ago.
Yeah, like, I think early thousands.
Yeah, so
the noughties.
The noughties? I like that.
That's what the Brits call anything in the 2000s.
The noughties. So...
Is not a zero for them?
Thank you for spelling it out.
Sorry, it just seemed like you weren't getting it.
The aughts and the noughts, I understand.
I'm sorry, it just looked like you weren't getting it.
You just assumed that I'm a small, smooth brain boy who doesn't know words.
I just said it looked like you weren't getting it.
I could see it in your eyes. They look down on my smooth brain. How dare you?
But you get it. It's like double zeros, right?
I get it. I get what that means. But this show, for anyone who hasn't watched Baki to this point, or at all, I would say that you don't watch this show for the plot. You watch this show for the fights. This is an unashamed...
I've got to say, I'm not agreeing with your point so far, so I'm just going to literally jump in.
Okay.
I think this season had the most plot out of all the seasons.
Right.
And was finally starting to tie up a lot of the bows and, like, give you your through line.
Right.
So, starting off this episode saying that you think it had a really weak story...
That's what I'm saying. It's not weak. It's just enough story to do the work of stringing together fight after fight after fight in a kind of natural way. But you're right. This season, more than the other two, was a great plot line, I think, especially for Ali Jr. Like, incredible through line for his character. And so, like I said, I don't think it's a weak plot. I think it's a plot taking a back seat to support why the show exists. And that's for the fights, the character backgrounds, and just enough dash of exposition to give enough weight to the fights themselves on a plot level. You know, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's light. But they do this on purpose, because that's not why you're watching it. I didn't get in for an engaging story. I got in to see fight after fight after fight, because that's what the show is selling, and I think they do a phenomenal job with selling that. So where we are,
I'm on the fence on that argument, I'll be honest.
Fair enough. So I would say, as an example, in the other seasons, the plot essentially, it boils down to, you know, five of the strongest individuals, and they're all inmates from around the world, gather in Japan by some ethereal cosmic force called Synchronicity.
I don't know. It was bad. I agree. The first two seasons made no sense whatsoever.
So, yeah, but the third one, you're right, does take a 180 on that and start to give me a good plot. So, where we are at the third season start, there is this tournament that happens in China every 100 years that tests, you know, masters of the martial arts, and they have to be rigorously deliberated over and chosen to even compete. And where we are at the beginning is Baki has demonstrated a prowess that the head of this competition says, yes, you can join as an extra in this Chinese tournament, because for hundreds of years, thousands even, it was Chinese exclusive. It's rare to have anyone outside the country come in, because it's supposed to be a display of a centuries of progress of Chinese martial arts. But in this tournament, we have some foreign players, some extra folk tournament game.
They didn't really explain why they started accepting foreign people.
Right.
But I would say it might be more because they now have foreign individuals as part of the Sea Kings.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we can talk about that in a bit, but yeah, go ahead.
So this tournament is being held in China at the beginning of the season, and we have the bulk of the contestants, the 12 contestants, are Chinese residents that all come from distinguished temples and dojos of illustrious histories of training some of the best China's ever seen throughout its history. And then we have, you know, returning winners of, I would say, past tournaments. How do you gain the title of Sea King, by the way? Do you have to have been invited once? do you have to, because you have the Sea Kings and the Sea Emperor, who has been,
so
like,
Sea Emperor is the guy who won the last Grand Raitai tournament.
Okay.
Sea Kings are basically people that beat the previous Sea King in their specific precinct or whatever.
Okay, cool. All right, so you can gain a title of Sea King every once in a while, but you can only gain Sea Emperor if you win the tournament. And it happens 100 years. So the Sea Emperor, Kaku, does come back to participate in this one. And the dude's like 146 years old.
Yeah, I think he's like 120 or something.
He's crazy. Participating also is Baki, as we said. He has been heavily poisoned in the last season by a poison hand user, someone who trains their hands to withstand more and more poisonous liquids, and basically prepare for a fight by letting their hands swell up, immersed in poison. So then when they hit somebody, they cut them, they poison them, and boom, they're out. That's the point of poison hand. So we have Baki, and not only Baki, his dad joins the fray. And we haven't seen him fight kind of really in the first two seasons. So that got me all hype.
Yeah,
we saw glimpses. Yeah.
All we saw was him just go absolutely ham on some people occasionally, but we haven't seen him like in a full on like fight tournament type style.
A controlled match.
Right,
yeah.
Controlled match. You've only seen him kind of like street brawl and just absolutely annihilate people.
There was no one that was ever even close to a match for him, but they wouldn't let him go. So he's like, all right, one punch him. Easy. I'll Saitama your ass and you're done. So we start popping off matches.
Well, let's finish the other foreign characters because they're really important.
You're right. I was really excited for the fights. So who are the other foreign characters? We have Jaku, the glasses guy that's bald with the beard.
Yeah, so he's a Japanese, I think it was karate.
Well, he had a lot of grapple moves,
judo.
Too.
He's judo.
Judo, that's it, yeah.
So we had a Japanese judo master who was a Sea King as well, but they still considered him like a foreigner.
Mm-hmm. He was the only Japanese Sea King.
Yeah. I can't remember the guy's name, the big Scottish dude.
Dorian, that's it.
So Dorian is one of those escaped inmates from the last couple of seasons, but he's also a Sea King because he was one of the heads of the same
temple that Retsu came from?
Yeah, exactly. The same temple that Retsu's in.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's one of the contestants, but since his brain is pretty effed up, basically big boy Biscuit comes in.
Biscuit Oliver?
Yeah.
Olivia. Yeah.
He ends up fighting in his stead, essentially. So,
so cool.
It's like them four and obviously Baki.
Yeah, and like you said, Dorian in the last season got his brain beat so bad that he regressed to basically 5 years old.
Right.
It's crazy. But yeah, so these four individuals, Retsu is from China, right? He's not a full.
Yeah.
He was in Japan for this whole inmate brawl thing. So he then was kind of the one who tipped off Baki to the Raitai tournament.
Okay. Well, so Baki was about to die and he brought him to China to fix him.
That's right. Yeah.
And so that's why he was there in general. And Retsu had this plan that he knew that one of the other Sea Kings was a poison hand user of a different type.
Yes.
And he assumed that if he got him to fight him, the poisons would interact or cancel out each other, counter each other.
So a little backstory on that. And I think one of the highlights of Baki as a show in general is the care they put into exposition on the different fighting styles and methodologies of the fighters. It gives such great weight to the work and the effort that they have dedicated to their specific Chinese or Japanese or whatever kind of fighting style that you have. And they go in on this poison hand usage where, you know, I think it was there were 7 scrolls that outlined the full breadth of the poison hand technique. And I think only 5 of them made their way to Japan.
Right, exactly.
The other 2 were kept in China and then expounded on there in isolation away from Japan. So Japanese poison hand users have what they call the yin hand that have all 5 of these other scrolls for the basis of their techniques, and the yang side were the other 2 and the rest of the traditions left in China. And it was a little convoluted the way that they assumed that they would cancel each other out, I think, but I guess the exposition worked to let you know that it was a viable plan, I guess. But yeah, so Baki goes up against that poison hand user, and yeah, the two poisons cancel out.
Wasn't like super interested in, to be honest, in that like little plot of like, well, his poison's gonna counteract this poison.
It felt like a shoehorn to get him back to full speed, right?
But I was okay with it, to be honest.
They had to give a reason. We knew, like, it would have been kind of interesting to see him sick through the whole thing, right? But again, we watch it. I want to see Baki at 100% beating people down.
Right.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of like interesting things to get his body back moving. And like, basically, obviously, when he was poisoned, he lost a lot of muscle mass. He wasn't eating. He wasn't doing all these things. And they did a lot of things to get him back to his former, like, absolutely brawlic status.
Uh-huh. So the thing they did is that Retsu made him this massive feast of meats and stuff and everything, and then made him drink 14 gallons of sugar water just to give his muscles.
I think it was kilograms.
Kilograms. It's even probably even more than or something like that.
But I don't know. It's a lot.
It was a big ass pot, and said, drink all of this. And he did. And he just lied on the floor, and he like basically steam sweated his way back to super recovery. This is what we've said in the past about Baki. It's like pseudo supernatural. It's like bodies pushed to their absolute limit to the point of no real human could perform these feats, but they're all kind of based in martial arts and body science. And it's like it's guidelines, essentially. Physicality and physiology. That's what I was thinking of. Physiology and martial arts are kind of guidelines to show some credence for the feats you see on screen, which are nothing natural in a lot of the cases. So.
Well, yeah, but I think even like real life martial arts kind of they heavily rely on like chakra or ki and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, having physical traits, even though it's not exactly like a real thing.
Right.
So well,
some of them go into that. I mean, they mention Yujiro's back muscle composition is literally so different than everyone else's. To the point where they say that's a huge contributor to why he's so physically strong, right? They say his back looks like a laughing demon, just the way his muscles are structured. And they talk about how like the back is the starting point for all strong strikes. And they go in on it. They go on this show, I think, is a beautiful love letter to the mangaka because he's celebrated for his ability in panels to show, you know, this kind of pseudo body horror in the way that he displays muscles and physical anatomy, but also the weight of his hits. You feel the weight in these animations. These hits are hard. They look amazing, frankly.
I would say it's some of the worst faces you'll ever see.
Yes.
It's like unnecessarily ugly.
I think that's the kind of the point, though, a little bit, right? Is that this is supposed to go into characters that are dedicating themselves to pushing their bodies to a martial arts and physical limit. And they all do specialize in something. And it's really cool to see that specialization clash with other people's because the fighters in the show, they spare no expense letting you into their backstory about the blood, sweat, and tears it took them to lead to a certain fight. You feel the loss and you feel the wins harder than I think a lot of other battle anime allow. You know, character development, not so much, but character backstory, beautifully done in Baki. So that's a good time. Who would you say is your favorite fighter this season? That's a toughie. There's a lot of really, really cool ones.
I would say Retsu is like particularly dope, but Kaku is obviously the coolest.
Yeah, Kaku is amazing. So there's a fight between...
Let's just talk about the tournament really fast.
Let's do that. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay, so basically the first rounds were like set up to where it'd be Sea King versus Foreigner.
Yeah.
And I think the first five matches, the Foreigners absolutely waxed the Sea Kings.
Smacked everybody. And this is a tournament to exemplify Chinese martial arts tradition. So to have this happen is like an affront to the actual tournament itself and why it exists. And some of those early fights are fucking awesome. Right?
And so by the end of that, there's actually only three Sea Kings left. There's Retsu. There's some like absolute no name loser, and then there's the Sea Emperor.
There's Jakku. Jakku's still there, right?
Yeah, but they're considering him a foreigner rather.
So they, oh yeah, so he does have the title, but they're like, yeah, he's Japanese.
Right, screw right, that guy. Right.
Yeah.
And so there's this like in the background, the Sea Emperor is really effing pissed.
Yeah, he's
and
not
he
happy.
Starts talking to them. He's like, Retsu, what do you think's going on? And Retsu basically says, well, seems like the caliber of these Sea Kings has dropped precipitously from like the last generation or just in general. Like none of them seem really all that strong. And, you know, which is, he's saying that in front of all these Sea Emperors that are, sorry, Kings that just got waxed and the guys who made them Sea Kings.
Right.
Which are like the Chinese governing body for martial arts, apparently, they can bestow the title. And he says this, and the Sea Emperor is basically like, yeah, I totally agree. These guys are absolute freaking losers.
Yes.
And he says, well, what we're going to do, I'm going to propose a match or a new structure of the tournament that's just going to be me, the Sea Emperor, versus all five of them in succession. And Retsu basically says, no, come on, you gotta let, you know, us fight or whatever.
Gotta let the boys come out and play. Come on, let us get out there.
So what they ended up doing was, well, Kaku goes to those guys, the governing body, and they say, like, give me your hand. And he's a Sea Emperor, so they have to listen. And he chops all their hands off and says, that's your punishment for letting us become such a laughingstock, essentially.
Right. You are the reason we're mediocre, because you're the one to dictate titles and who comes in and who does not.
And he's also pissed that even foreigners even got the title of Sea King in the first place, which, I don't know, I really loved this part about the season where it's really like the pride of the different countries for them. But for Baki and all them, they don't really give a shit about that. They're more in it for like the competition.
Yeah, they're personal
specifically,
goals. Yeah.
Right, Yujiro, his whole goal in life is just to be the world's strongest. And Baki's whole goal in life is to be just a little bit stronger than his dad. He doesn't care about being the world's strongest.
That's one of the highlights of Baki's, because we didn't really see his pure motives for, or the way he feels about his motives for beating his father. We knew in the past that his mother was killed at the hands of his father, and that was his main motivator for why he wants to kill his dad. But he has a line in this season that is so, like, striking.
Poignant.
Poignant. That's it. Thank you so much for the word.
No problem, man.
But he says to, I want to say, his old friend with the eye patch later in the season. He said it a couple times, but I need to be stronger than my dad.
You're talking about Orochi.
Orochi, that's it. He says to him, I want to be stronger than my dad. If my dad were the weakest creature on Earth, I would be okay with the second worst, the weakest creature on Earth. He just wants to be stronger than his dad. And I think someone else in a different conversation hears about this and he's like, well, that's a really unfortunate situation that his dad is the strongest creature that nations bow to him.
Right.
And it just is an unfortunate situation, but it's driven Baki this far. That one point, that one goal has driven him so far.
But I think it's like really a compelling thing for Baki, because he does seem like he cares about becoming the world's strongest in the first couple of seasons. But it seems like potentially post, like, dying, essentially.
Yeah, he was.
And finding the girl that he wants to marry and all this stuff, that he has kind of changed his opinion to where he doesn't particularly care about being the strongest. He just wants to beat his dad, which, of course, was part of the through line between why he became, like, tried to be the strongest in the first place.
Right.
But I think it really, like, pinpoints and is precisely why he did what he did.
Yes.
And I think it makes, at least for the audience, it gives us like a better understanding of why he did it. And like, it makes you feel not as weird about this like 15-year-old kid with scars literally all over his body and all this stuff, right? Like, it seems almost like self-torture stuff until you kind of realize like his dad is literally the worst person on Earth.
Yeah. And I think it really, it's a nice pivot for the audience, because in the first two seasons, you see this kid, clearly a man of pure prodigy, pure skill. He's the father of the strongest creature on Earth. You would think that with that inside of him, plus all of the visible results of all of his fights and hard work, of course you'd think he's just trying to become the strongest guy and still has this B-side goal of taking out his dad. But this moment shows that he is not, there's not a couple things to him. He is a focused guy on one thing, and his path just happens to be harder than anyone else to reach that goal.
So I think that all kind of really boils down to the really weak plot of the first two seasons, because Baki wouldn't have gotten involved unless people knew he was the number one in the underground in Japan and then came to fight him, essentially, to taste defeat. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, yeah, that does speak to the weak part of the story, is that it basically is just enough story in the first two seasons to get a group of individuals together in an antagonistic format to just have fights happen. But like you said, in this season, there are through lines for Baki. There's character development for Baki. There isn't any really for like Yujiro at all.
Well, so he's like literally the pinnacle of the human race in terms of like strength and power and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you saw Kaku was trying to teach him stuff.
Yeah.
About what true power is, what real strength is, stuff like that, right? And he was using the style where basically he could be hit as hard as Yujiro wanted, but he could never like be beaten because of whatever method he was using. I think it's called like Shiloh or something like that.
Yeah, it's a really high level technique that took him over 100 years to master. And it was essentially the ability to, you know,
roll with the punches to the umpteenth degree.
Exactly. He rolls with everything. And that match might be one of my favorites in the first couple rounds. That might have been the second round fight, because Kaku had that fight with somebody really, and it ended super quick in the first round.
Yeah. I honestly don't consider the first round or whatever to even exist, because they had to get away from that storyline really fast.
Yeah.
Because all it was there for was to get Baki back to normal.
Yes.
And to show just like how absolutely disgusting everyone from the foreigner side was versus like the weaker Sea Kings.
Yeah.
And we didn't get to this, I guess, earlier, but instead of, you know, Kaku just fighting all five of them, they decided, okay, Kaku's son, this other guy, and Retsu, and then I guess Kaku himself, and I guess one more person.
There was someone else there, I think.
Yeah, we're going to fight them five of the foreigner team. So it's going to be like China versus U.S. and Japan.
Yeah, and I think that moment is where I think the season separated itself from the other two. I think it started out a little bit. You could tell that they're just having fights to kind of string together reasons to have, like you said, China getting, you know, feeling embarrassed and basically a bunch of catalysts for later stuff. But the second that alliance formed, the Chinese versus U.S./Japan, that right there is where the season starts to set itself apart. So those fights, I think, are worth talking about a little bit. Was it in the first round? One of my favorite.
Stop saying first round.
What do you mean? What do you mean? Oh, well, I'm trying to think of the fight where the guy. Okay, so he's one of my favorite fighters. Is the guy in the Chinese team who fights with his hands in his pockets?
So he's basically like a Taiwanese like massive killer or something.
I think they call it IAI style. And basically, he's always at the ready with his hands in his pockets. And it's kind of disarming because you can't, like, the second, like, your hand comes out, he's already in striking position. Which is so, that was probably my favorite style outside of Kaku's, I think.
He moved the pocket from his hand.
Right.
So he was moving his whole body and using his, like, hips to generate the power.
Yeah. So when he was pulling forward with his hip, his hand came out and he already had the power to hit somebody like as hard as he would if his hands were at the ready. So that's when he was fighting Biscuit. Because he puts his hands in his like speedo looking thing. Like, this is fun. I'm gonna try this too. What other fights happen that are meaningful? I think, yeah, we mentioned the Yujiro and the Kaku. It's logic versus truly the strongest. And
okay, well, that was the last fight of this, so let's just quickly say Baki absolutely wrecks Kaku's son.
Yes. Oh.
Literally in one hit.
one hit his ass.
And that guy was cocky as shit and just like all this stuff.
Yes.
And we really see Baki's like literally back. And not only is he back, he's like, he's at the power. So in the first two seasons, he was really strong. But after he banged his girlfriend, he was like ridiculous.
Yeah.
But then he like immediately got poisoned, which was pretty unfortunate for that show. And now he's back to that like post-bang power.
Yes.
Which, of course, he's just like insane.
Truly, Baki's like, I think one of his greatest skills is just how truly gifted he is at a natural talent for fighting, because we saw it in the first season. We saw it a couple times here, that he is so good at emulating other people's fighting styles that he just amasses it into his own. He's like this rolling ball of just like gathering different fighting styles and then just melding it seamlessly into his own fight style. We saw it with the whip guy in season two, that after just like getting hit a couple times, he's like, oh yeah, I can do this. My dad made me do this a little bit and he did it better than the other guy could. Who spent his whole life working on that style, which is crazy.
I don't recall that. But anywho, so that was one fight. Then the next fight was Muhammad Ali Jr.,
mm-hmm.
who absolutely wrecked the guy in literally one punch.
And again, I think my favorite character of the season is Ali Jr. His character arc is amazing. We can talk about it for the second half of the season, because this tournament is only like the first half of the whole season, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, I was surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised too, but it's... I think it worked to the benefit of another character's growth and kind of fall. Yeah, we have that fight.
Then we had Retsu versus Jakku.
Yes, that was I liked that fight too, because
Retsu essentially was just flexing on the guy the whole time.
Yeah.
So he was using that guy's style against him. Basically, he would constantly let him get him in like relatively compromising situations. Like with judo throws and shit like that, he would go in and he knew the guy was going to do it. And he still like gave him like his handshake or whatever.
Put it there, buddy. And then just throws his ass.
And so the crowd was really behind Retsu, obviously the Chinese versus Japanese.
Yep.
But, you know, he comes through and just shows like how much of an absolute thug he is.
Retsu is a fucking amazing. Have we ever seen him fight at truly full power? Like,
oh yeah, lots of.
I because
the one that fucked Dorian up.
Right. I keep thinking he's still got more in the tank that we've never seen. Because there's a reason why he's just been such a mainstay for all three seasons. Because
he's the coolest guy.
He is super cool, dude. And that fight was really cool. And the whole time, I did like Jakku's character because he is genuinely a good guy. He's into trickery, which isn't necessarily great for these kind of controlled tournament style fights. But he's always recruiting for his dojo in Japan. He's always on that hustle, dude.
He's like, hey, let's teach all these kids martial arts together.
Yeah, let's teach kids how to throw people. But he's doing it for the kids, trying to reach the kids.
How do we reach these kids?
With bloody fights.
Yeah, with our fists.
With our fists.
But that was cool. And what it did do, though, so this second half of the tournament, essentially, Kaku had said, we're going to win five straight.
Yeah, that was
And they
ballsy.
Lose the first three. And then Retsu's the first one to win, so now it's 3-1, essentially. And it comes down to Kaku versus Yujiro.
Could be my favorite fight in the whole season.
Philosophically as well.
Yeah, it's so good. Because like I mentioned before, it is a man who values nothing but his own strength versus Kaku, who has spent an entire lifetime going through that strength phase and then giving it all up for something greater that only a life as long as his could possibly give him.
Right, so he at one point was the strongest man in China, and he got literally embarrassed by this super old, just like pure martial artist, pure what they call logic of martial arts. And after that, he really like had a kind of a questioning moment in his life where he's like, did everything I do really, you know, make me strong, or is it just a physical, you know, thing and I'm not actually like the strongest man in China?
I think it finally clicked for him when he had that encounter with that old man, and he was told or remembered that martial arts was developed for the weak to encounter the strong. So he gave up slowly but surely his muscular toned physical strength for understanding martial arts at its most distilled, like its purest form. And it let him pull out techniques that let him keep up with the strongest man on the planet. So
it made me feel like a sort of Netero type vibe.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it doesn't exactly translate one to one, but you know, Netero is like this disgusting character in Hunter x Hunter, and he basically decides, like, you know, he gets to a point where he doesn't know what else to do with his life, and so he just decides to go out in the woods and pray and, like, you know, learn true discipline.
And he did it for like 10 straight years or something crazy like that.
I can't remember. I think it was like 4 or 5 years, but still ridiculous.
Yeah. And that's,
and then like, he comes back to just like show it off. And even, you know, at the point in the story where we are in Hunter Hunter previous his death, spoilers. he is still regarded as this like insanely strong man, even though like he looks frail, he looks all this stuff.
Yeah.
But then he can just exhibit like unbelievable power when he needs to. And he uses like his nin like no other.
Yes. It's taken
him. So it's kind of similar in that regard to how Kaku kind of views, he was the strongest, physically strongest man in China at one point.
But was he the strongest?
He got embarrassed.
Fighter.
That's, but he wasn't the strongest fighter.
Yes. And that was a huge moment for him. And I think
it's a big callback to season 1 and 2, as well as the second half of season 2. When previously the old guy, I can't remember the guy's name.
Jajukin or something like that. It's Jakukin or something. But he's the guy with the glasses, the older dude.
Yeah, like old guy glasses.
He's good at judo himself, right? Or
right.
The throwing, yeah. And he managed to kind of, you know, embarrass, not really embarrass, but show his skill against one of the strongest men in the world, Biscuit, who wanted to walk in there and get himself a black belt in judo just because he thought he could. And this tiny dude whipped his ass around the gym. And, you know, I like this idea of battling philosophies and not just with fists. And that's, Baki is very good at that.
Right. Was also the first time we really see Baki interact with his father in any way.
Yeah.
Especially any way where they're like sort of on the same, like allies or on the same squad, essentially. So this second half of the tournament was really cool for that as well, because, you know, it's the first time we've seen them really not just instantly say, like, fuck you to each other.
Yeah. And it's clear that they do not like each other. Baki hates the man's guts, but there is no denying that they have a common bond through fighting.
Right.
And a common bond.
And you
bond.
Literally, like, you can see it because they literally are talking about all these styles and stuff. And there's even times when Kaku and Yujiro are fighting, that Baki's like, what is he doing? He's just getting his shit rocked out there.
Right.
And so he's starting to like almost question his mission, because he's like, is he about to lose to this old guy? You know what I mean? It felt like he put his dad on a pedestal, not exactly a positive pedestal, but a pedestal for being the world's strongest asshole. And you know, he sees him as
this man a plaque, world's strongest asshole.
The only guy that can beat him is me. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
right.
And so when he's faced with this like potential for his dad losing, he's like almost seems like let down, and then his dad just turns it up to like 11 and a half.
He crushes the man. Well, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. Remember that he was gonna go in for a crushing blow, and the man who studied martial arts logic for 100 years pulls a defensive move that he calls the ultimate defensive move. He stops his heart.
He dies.
Match. He dies of what they called old age in the ring, and then he revives himself in the locker room and says, it's the ultimate defense. You die, they've won, but if you can walk away after death, then did you really lose? You still get to fight another day. And it does piss off Yujiro a lot. Like, how dare you? Like, you crafty, bitchy old man. But
it was almost like a respect thing, though. Because, you know, you would expect someone who's just like this absolute wild boar to just go kill the guy afterwards, right?
Right.
But he almost was just like, he kind of like laughed with him. It was like, you little minx.
Because you're right. There was a respect there. He's just like, God damn it, you died. Damn. Kind of wish I did that for you. But it is really, really cool. I think what you said about Baki when it comes to Yujiro, I have another theory about like the method by which he is kind of interacting with his father. I don't necessarily think he put him on a pedestal any less throughout the entire season. I think his growth, and more intensely, him becoming a ferocious beast like his father. As we saw through the fights he had this season, he became more and more, even his face contorts more and more like his dad when he's in the pivotal moments of winning a fight. And that is when at the end of the season, he looks at his dad for the second time in the season and says, fight me. And that time he's like, you are now worth it. Because I think Baki's journey is, as you become the strongest man, what does that entail all encompassing? Will he, like we may have seen glimpses of, become more and more like his father, the man that he despises? Will he beat his father and become the strongest person in the world? But at what cost? Will he become the man that killed his mom?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seemed like it was kind of hedging toward that with his interactions with his girlfriend.
Right, yeah.
It was honestly a really weird season for that kind of whole thing.
For Baki's kind of journey.
And his girlfriend, like...
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff about it I liked, and we can get that in, like, just a bit, because we don't have, like, infinite time. But I didn't like... So, in the end of last season, she's basically been watching him die and been trying to, like, nurse him back to health.
Right.
She's been, like, keeping him alive and stuff like that. She comes with him to China, and then he's starting to regain some of his abilities and stuff like that. And she's like, her tears revive him at one point.
He perks up and eats a tear midair. Yeah, after he's been sucrose recovered.
And,
baby, your tears taste so good.
Well, no, she cried into his mouth when he was dead, like dying from the poison.
Yeah.
In that one match. And then that in conjunction with the Yang fist, I guess.
Yang fist.
Somehow got him revived. But anywho.
Right.
She's kind of in this weird situation where she keeps kind of... I felt like she was telling him his fighting was, like, not okay anymore. Or, what are you doing kind of thing.
It's
like, why are you putting yourself through this kind of situation?
I think that comes more poignantly after she watches him nearly die and then recover, like you said. And then immediately when, like, okay, you're healthy. We can be together now. You're not going to die. And he goes out and puts himself in harm's way for the fight. And he's still like, what are you doing? Like, worth it to you?
She knows what the fuck his goal is. It makes no sense why she would all of a sudden not be okay with his goal.
So I think it's interesting with her character, because we saw in the second part of part one, season two, that Yujiro visits her and Baki. And remember him telling her, you are his woman. You have an obligation.
You're
going to make him stronger. And I need you to do this. You have to play this role. So I think in this season, she has felt obligated. She does care for Baki a lot. And I would argue that she loves him. But she's also mixing that with this obligation of this family and this world of fighters, that the women in it are basically there to elevate the fighter to another level, like we saw when he finally banged her and he got way wicked strong, right? That's, as a fighter from Yujiro's perspective, that's the woman's role in a relationship, is to make him the best fighter he can. She is now having, you know, internal odds with, I care for him and his protection, but I know I am the catalyst for his strength. And, you know, that's a very, you know, I think,
I mean, yeah, it just doesn't, for me, feel like it jives with her season one.
which was
honestly, puppy dog in love with the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? She, like, would follow him around. She'd, like, hope that he, you know, talked to her and stuff like that. And then, you know, now she's, like, I don't know if she feels empowered to where she feels like, you know, I've been, like, protecting you and bringing you back from the brink of the dead, like, listen to what I have to say.
Yeah. And I think
that's almost a little bit of what it is.
I think her placement here now, going forward in the show and future seasons, is melding with my prediction of Baki's, you know, escalation to strength, but downward spiral into the man he hates so much, that her role to play is, you know, Yujiro's woman was ended by him, right? She was killed by him. And I feel this history repeating itself vibe here, with seeing glimpses of Baki turning into his father and then she gaining the strength to say, you know, enough is enough. My personal views is you shouldn't be fighting. And I think that's going to clash in a really big way in later seasons. Right. And that might be, she might be the catalyst to realize, oh my God, I'm going down the path of my dad. I'm becoming my father.
Mm. So I don't know. I liked Baki's, personal transformation in this season.
Yeah, me too.
As it relates to his girlfriend, because in previous seasons, he was a little bit more of that she's mine kind of mindset.
Yeah, and he has that line.
And he basically, in this season, he's at this point where he knows people might not be able to follow him where he's going, what it felt like to me. And he goes, basically, like, look, this is your decision. You pick me, and if you find someone better, you go with them kind of situation when they're talking about Ale Jr. Okay, really fast. The Grand Raatai tournament ends as like a no contest because Kaku lost but didn't.
Right. He lost, but he died, so no one really won, kind of.
And they honestly were like, wow, that fight was sick as fuck.
You know what? Everyone wins. Fuck it. Why not?
And so that kind of ended without really a victor or any real... I don't know. That was honestly
it's very abrupt.
Very abrupt. But then the rest of the season is basically Ale Jr.
You know it's Ali, right? Like Muhammad Ali's kid?
Yeah, but they spelled it like Ale. So I was just saying it.
It
was basically him saying he wants to fight Baki, and he wants Baki's girlfriend to be his wife.
Yeah, he literally meets up with Baki's girl and tells her
a thousand times.
And tells her, I want to marry you. And she's like, I'm with Baki. And he's like, okay, I'll go out and show you that I'm a better man than him.
I literally love that conflict because it was all going on in the background and Baki did not give a fuck about it.
I loved this half of the season probably more than any chunk in Baki so far because we got a beautiful dissection of Ali Jr.'s rise, his mission to complete his father's mixed martial arts style, but he was thrust into a world that he wasn't fully prepared for. Because he goes and meets with people that Baki have beaten in the past. And he starts all these fights to try to prove and better his skills and prove to her that he is good enough. And he clearly doesn't have, throughout this second half of the season, he doesn't have the understanding between what is sport and what is a fight. What is death fight, like you are fighting to the death. He never had that. He's always treated every match like this is a sporting event. So the first couple of people he meet with, Jack Hammer, a couple other individuals.
No. So the first one he meets with is the old guy with glasses.
Yes.
We don't know his name. Sorry.
It's a Jajukikin or something like that.
Something like that. And then he meets with Dagen Orochi.
Yes.
No, Dopo Orochi.
Dopo? He meets with Dopo, the guy with the
eye patch.
The eye patch. Okay. He's the one who started that
and
karate dojo.
He beats the living fuck out of both of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of like those two masters are kind of not seeing this guy as like an actual threat, it seems like.
So that I think was so beautifully done that it's clear Ali Jr. is a prodigy in his own right. He's a brilliant fighter.
For sure.
So he came at them. They didn't really give him a lot of the time or day. His skill overpowered them in a situation where they didn't consider it a fight. This is an encounter. And he beats them. But then when they come back later...
Well, they kind of viewed it as a sparring match, not like a fight.
Right. And they're like, okay, this kid's out here. He fucks. But let's see if he can fight. Let's see if he can fight.
Okay, well... In between that, he goes and tries to beat Jack Hanma. Which is Baki's older brother.
Yes.
And so they didn't show this in the show, really, but that is the guy that Baki beat to become the number one underground fighter in Japan.
He took a bunch of body-enhancing steroids and drugs and stuff, and he is now wickedly stupid strong on with assisted biological help. But he's huge. He is undeniably big.
So Muhammad has gotten kind of his ego, kind of inflated.
Right.
He feels like he's going to take Jack Hanma no problem. They go in the sewers, and Jack Hanma proceeds to absolutely, unequivocally demolish this kid.
Like, beat him down to an inch of his life every time. All these people do.
And he keeps getting up and fighting. Because he thinks like, oh, I'm disgusting. This is going to, I can get back from this. And he ends up literally just like demolishing the guy and like breaking his, I think he broke his like arm, broke his leg.
Yep.
Smashed his face in and stuff like that. And this is the first time that there was like a massive blow to Muhammad Ali Jr.'s ego.
And
because this whole time everyone's telling him, you've completed your father's martial art. Like, it's beautiful, all this stuff.
Yeah. But the thing is, the one thing he couldn't grasp, and I don't think he, it took that fight and the subsequent rematches with the other two masters he beat to understand, basically less than beat into his brain, that you are not in the ring right now. This is a this is a life or death fight right here. Like, this should be to the death. And he doesn't really have that killing edge in a fight, right?
And the cool thing they showed was, after Hanma's fight, he gets his shit broken. He's like in casts and shit.
He keeps coming back to meet with Baki's girl, and every time he's more and more beat up. And she's like, "What are you doing?
She's like, "What are you doing?" And she kind of obviously recognizes similar things that Baki had exhibited, like a semi self destructive nature. Except Baki never took damage like this guy did, at least since she's known him,
right?
And every time this one of those masters will come up to him and say, you know, at the same place, which is hilarious.
Right.
Like, "Hey, can you come help me with something?"
Yeah.
And then they go out and they basically say, "We're going to fight right now. And it's going to be a real fight, not like a joke fight like we did before." And every time he's like, "Well, I just beat you. And now I'm like not in really that good of a condition." And they go, "Well, you're going to let that kind of stop this, you know?" And it was pretty interesting because it really showed the difference in philosophy between, like you're saying, somebody who's fighting for a like sport match,
right,
where you wouldn't get in the ring if you're injured.
Like, you expect to walk away.
But you wouldn't get in the ring injured as hell.
Right, exactly. But in a real fight, it could happen anywhere at any time. And Baki as a show has demonstrated that this is the case in their world. And
that is the point of martial arts. Even if you're hurt, you know, small, whatever, your martial art can show through and still win the battle is the idea. So they both proceed to absolutely demolish this kid.
Right. And it all comes to a head. I don't know if anything happens in the middle, but it all comes to a head when the Baki and Ali Jr. fight is finally set up.
Yeah, so what happens in the middle is Ali, the actual Ali, comes back to fight his son. So he's actually been training in the background with his Parkinson's and all that stuff.
He can still move. Not for super long, but he can still move.
Yeah, and he's got like bursts of just like disgusting ability. But he said like basically he's been training ever since like he was 50 and now he's 60.
Yeah.
And he said like it's taken so much longer to get back to like even like 1/10 of my ability and stuff like that.
Hell yeah.
But he fights his son and his son's like, "Dad, I'm like in cast and shit like that." And he goes, "You're going to let something as small as that kind of dictate whether you're going to like be a man and fight me?"
That's why I also think Ali and Ali Jr.'s placement in the season are brilliant, because his son is still naive, but he's as old as Baki, if not even a little older.
I think he's older than Baki.
Right. So, I mean, and his father, who's celebrated by even Yujiro, the strongest man on earth, as someone worth his utmost respect, and a guy who fought for sport, understood what it takes to make it out here in these kind of death fight scenarios. And that comes to a head, as we see in the Baki and Ali Jr. fight. We do see in that fight, you know, Baki and Ali go head to head, but it's clear that Baki is there with that killing edge to make it as the strongest person eventually. He's got that eye. He's got that keen look. Whereas Ali develops it a little bit further into this, he says, "I'm going to elevate this style. It's not hit or be hit. It's kill or be killed." But Baki says something very poignant when he finally takes him out.
Well, so first of all, that fight was super fast.
It was super fast.
He beat him in like literally two hits and like basically started choking him out. And Muhammad Ali actually jumped in the ring and stopped him from killing his son and said like, "You know, I apologize for doing this, but I was pretty sure you were about to kill my son, so I had to come in here, and you can kill me if you want, but, you know, I couldn't let you kill my son."
That scene was okay.
And Baki basically says, "Yeah, I was totally about to kill his ass, so you did the right thing."
That scene, just this whole exchange between Muhammad Ali and Baki, was so telling of this whole season for everyone in that ring at that moment. Like, Baki says to him, "Your son," his last words in this fight were, "I now know it's kill or be killed," but he was never willing to put his life on the line to take mine.
Right.
Like you did to get into the ring to stop me. You understand that your son tried to survive without being killed.
He didn't
have that last little thing, but because Baki had it in troves, his literally his unchanging indifferent look to saying, I would have killed your son. His opinion on, you know, survivor be killed or kill, rather than killer be killed. And the way his face looks is he's ready to choke him out. And he grew like veins in the animation. And it looked like he leveled up in that exact moment.
He's really, he's become like this callous, kind of tempered, just absolute dominant force.
Right.
Which is similar to like what his dad does, except he doesn't take the joy out of killing that his dad does. He's just doing it because he knows he has to.
Yet. That's my thing.
Maybe.
You're right. You're right.
I don't think it's going to get to that point. I'll be honest with you.
Here's the thing. I would really like to see the next season be, because at the end of this season, right after that fight, he looked to his dad and said, I want you to fight me. But he said it once earlier in the season, like we said earlier in this episode, that when he said it earlier to his dad at the Raitai tournament, his dad scoffed at him, choked him against the wall and said, you don't have the right to say that to me. Like, I you may get a little hype here and we might be in the same team and you may have had a couple wins today. No. You can't say that shit to me.
Well, so Baki at that point was still like in his depressed body standpoint.
Yeah.
Where he was poisoned and shit like that. And he basically tells him, his dad, that his dad's scared of him. And he's like, don't ever say that to me.
Yeah, don't ever.
And he literally throws him through a wall. And then runs, like, walks away because he's not going to fight his dead son.
Right.
And he finally, at the end, says, like, yes, you're worthy to actually take me on in a fight. And he goes to the underground guy and he's like, put us on the back, you know, docket. We're doing this.
We're doing this shit. And, you know, that I'd like to see, because that's where we end the season, I would like to see my theory for the best case scenario. I don't know anything about the manga, so I could be dead wrong. But I would like to see Yujiro and Baki training by themselves, away from each other, getting ready for this fight. And we saw at the end of the season, all of the five inmates from seasons one and two have kind of gone through this weird metamorphosis and this evolution of themselves personally. And they're all breaking out of jail and they're all kind of making their escape. And I want to see them try to get at Yujiro and Baki. And then all of the friends that Baki's made around the way are basically saying, let him train. He's got to fight. Because the whole end of that season, every major character have conversations together because they all heard about the Yujiro and Baki fight. They're all hype as fuck for this. So I think that they're going to defend Baki from being attacked by these guys. And that's where we're going to get the catalyst for a lot of these other fights.
So actually, I think what you saw was each of those characters that fought with him in the first couple seasons were asked about the Alae Jr. versus Baki fight, not the Yujiro versus Baki fight. And they were all thinking that Alae was going to win.
Oh, no, that was that part, but it was after the fight, after the Baki Alae Jr. fight, that they have a couple people in dojos say, like, you know, Baki Hama's gotten stronger, but the ogre has taken on his challenge. Do you think you could beat Baki right now? No, but he was taken on by the ogre. So it's clear that this match has weight to everyone in the space. I think they're going to come to the aid of Baki while he trains in isolation to keep those inmates away from him. Some will get through, and then Baki's going to show the results of his training. And at the end of next season, we're going to get a Yujiro and Baki fight. But I'm curious to see.
It kind of seemed like it was going to happen more, like, sooner than that.
You think so?
That's the impression I got at the end was Yujiro basically said, like, put us on the documents.
Yeah, set this up.
And I'll accept it.
Right.
So it seemed to me like that was going to be more of an imminent thing. And then maybe, I don't know, I still don't think he's stronger than Yujiro right now.
No, I don't think
he is. Even though we really haven't seen him actually have to fight so far, because he's just been so unbelievably strong compared to whoever he's fighting. So it's kind of like a weird situation where, like, we know he's disgusting, but we've seen actual feats of his father. Just, like,
yeah,
wrecking actually unbelievable talents.
Hell,
you know?
Yeah. The why I say that match I think is going to come later in the season than earlier is because if the writers were smart, which this already exists, so it's not really speaking too much of that, but if the story itself were smart, the next season, I would love for it to be an exploration for Baki on what does it really take to be the strongest? Because that's his aim. He's got to be stronger than his dad, so he's got to be the strongest creature on Earth. What does it take to become the strongest creature? And are the atrocities that his dad committed to shirk off all of the excess like fat from his life, right? His wife, his son, other people, like what is that the sacrifice it takes to reach his level? And I want to see Baki explore that and maybe deny it and find another way. Because we've seen this, in my opinion, is the road he's down. Like you said before, he's probably going to places others can't follow. So I think this the theme of the next season needs to be internalizing it within Baki, understanding what it actually takes to be the strongest. Because there's a line that Hyujiro said when they had that interaction, when he said, fight me, and he accepted. He said that your rash words are just an example of how fresh you are. So he still thinks, despite the accepting his challenge, that he is still fresh. And I think it's because Yujiro knows what it takes to be at his level. And I want to see Baki could be confronted with those choices.
Well, there's that, but, you know, I think it's also just Baki is so young.
Yeah, he's like just turning 18.
He's 17, 18.
Jeezy, yeah.
There just really is no way that he's going to win this fight unless something like really transformative happens next season. And like, it's hard to say because they really have shown zero feats from Baki since he's, you know, really evolved post-bandage.
Post-bandage, yeah.
And so, I don't know, man. I'm super hype. This season was a lot better in my opinion. It was more along the lines of like King Ganashara, where it had at least a semi-decent plot, and, you know, the fights kind of carried it, obviously. I would say, you know, it looks better than King Ganashara because it's not CGI, generally.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I still don't get why they fuck up the faces of all the, like, strong people so bad.
I think that goes back to the mangaka, because this person, the name escapes me right now, but I know the person's really famous, but they are famous for that, like, kind of hyper-realized kind of slightly distorted art style, and they're keeping pretty true to that. But I think it works. You're not going to see anyone watching at home. You're not going to see another show that looks like Baki, and they made sure of that. I think it speaks more as a praise rather than for me at least.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy solid.
It's great. So, what would you give Baki as a whole? Considering this season is a highlight of the three.
I would say as a whole, it's probably an 80.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to give an 82 as a whole. This season, I would call it a 90.
I would say like 88.
Okay. I liked it because the animation was clean. You felt, you know, you felt the weight of every hit. The fights felt as impactful as you might see them in real life. The exposition of all the characters' fighting styles is very interesting, so you can know what they're actually doing and how it's applied. And the whole Ali Jr. storyline.
They built him up a lot.
That's why I like it. Because they built him up to be the harbinger from the West to basically clown these people. But his rude awakening was kind of ours as well. That this is not the world you know. And I don't think you have it. Him losing, he was sobbing. He was downtrodden. He couldn't control himself. And even when asked by Baki's girl, aren't you a fighter? When he's crying in the hallway and he shakes his head no. I think right there, it showed that a man with prodigy isn't enough. You need to have the mindset. And he didn't have it. Baki does.
Yeah, it's fair. It's just they spent a lot of time with him. And then for him to like literally basically provide zero contest.
Right, yeah.
Seems like, you know, if they hadn't kept saying you've perfected your dad's martial art and all this stuff, I don't think I would care as much. But they've tried to portray that this guy is just like unreal.
But isn't that been Baki's MO? Like every cool character, they really hammer home how they have perfected their art, they have dedicated their life to this, and they still get their ass beat in a punch, right?
It's generally not that quick is the problem.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. You're saying they didn't give enough, you know,
time. It
would
be cool
yeah.
if there was like some back and forth.
Yeah, I would like
but
to
But I think if there wasn't, maybe Yujiro wouldn't have accepted the bout.
Good point.
Because yeah. I think really just his killing intent and how quickly he dealt with this guy is what got Yujiro hype.
Yeah, that and it was. And you could see it in his face. The second that he got him in a chokehold, Baki bulked. His veins bulged. His eyes went red like his dad's when he's about to fight. That parallel exists. And I loved when I saw it. I'm like, ooh, that's a visual parallel right there.
Ogre part two.
Ogre Jr., baby. Yeah, so I mean, honestly, this season ripped. I'm really excited if they keep this trajectory, making the fights more fluid within a nice, meaty plot line, then I'm into it. I want to explore the mindset of fighters now. I think that's where Baki's going. because perfecting an art form is no longer enough. You got to have the mindset. And let's see if Baki's got it.
Well, it just kind of seems, though, like, if they do let him beat him in the season, like, what's the point anymore? So I can't imagine that he's going to win next season.
I guess that's true. Or I think that they're going to, you know, they have the ability to stretch because of so many fights. They can stretch out a season over the course of just a couple days or like a week if they really wanted to. I mean, this season might have been a couple weeks, right?
I almost think that what you're saying with the old inmates coming back might provide like a postponement to the match between Yujiro and Baki.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe some of Baki's friends are going to start getting their shit rocked, and Baki's going to have to, like, peace and go deal with that.
Okay. That might be... That's what I'm saying, is I think that I would like to see that they all have kind of a revenge on Baki and his team. So they go after Baki after hearing all this news about Yujiro accepted him. Oh, he's strong now. I'm on to it. But then all his friends are like, this guy's training. I'll fight you. I've grown too. And then once they start getting rocked, Baki's going to come out of his training and be like, y'all fucking done.
Well, it almost seems like, though, they've made Baki so fucking strong right now, at least we would think he is.
Right.
That, like, what's the point? No matter, even if they have like, trained, like, Baki is, like, on this weird level right now where we cannot see a ceiling.
Right, yeah.
We've seen no ceiling since he's banged his GF.
Yeah, his potential is limitless at this point. His personal ceiling is his dad. Once he breaks that and stands atop, he's done.
That's what I mean.
Right.
It's a dangerous, you know, mm-hmm. time to be a Baki fan, because it might be over after
this. It might be
season.
Over after this. But honestly, like, if you guys are looking for some super high octane, really, really high quality action, Baki is for you. If you haven't seen it yet, 3 seasons are on Netflix. You will not be disappointed if you're a fight fan. I think it isn't for everybody. It's got a good bit of body horror in it. Example, some guy literally blows in one dude's ear and out of the other side comes his brains.
For sure.
That's the kind of stuff you're in for. I mean,
there's grotesqueness, but I think it lends to a lot, like what you were saying, that real fights are not,
they're not pretty. They're not supposed to be pretty. They're supposed to be one. And that's it. That's the whole thing.
Yep. Super, super solid. Make sure you check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
thank you guys for listening.
Thank you, everybody.
And watching at home.
Hi, YouTube gang.
Hey, bros.
You may have noticed me wearing the same stuff last week because we record in batches.
Please like, comment, and subscribe, and hit the little notification bell.
Yeah, leave us a review on Apple. 5 stars is great for helping us get into other people's recommendations as they listen to other anime podcasts. Year 2 is all about growth for us, baby, and exposure. So
I'd
help
say,
us out.
I'd say 5 stars is right.
5 stars is right, at least. Or we're still waiting on you guys coding up a 6-star in Apple reviews. But if you want to listen with your ears and not your eyes, go to Apple, Spotify, Google, CastBox, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts fixed. Hit us up on our Instagram at weebology.podcast. We got memes on memes on news whenever we remember to do them.
Faux show. If you want to drop us a line, hit us up at weebologypodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at weebologyp.
Weebologyp! Love it so much. But that's all the plugs. And until next class, I'm Ricky.
And I'm Ethan.
And this has been Weebology.
Adios.
Deuces! I want to fight. I'm good on that.